All right, I wanted to share with you a couple stories before we get started here.
Are they about the Packers?
They are not about the Packers, don't worry.
Thank you.
One of them is back when I was doing my previous job. For those who don't know, I used to work on farms, and we'll just leave it at that. But it was my last day working on the farms before I was going to quit and pursue my first ministry job. And one of the farms that I used to go to, we'll call him Farmer Pete, because that was his name. But he was just kind of always a grump whenever I went there. Always complaining that he got too many bull calves. You know, farmers always want heifer calves, the females, so that they can have, you know, more cows that will produce milk and make them more money. So they're not happy when the cow breeder comes along and gives them bull calves. So he would always give me a hard time, and he was just kind of always grumpy. And I never really expected much out of this guy. This was my last day working as a cow breeder. And after I bred his cow, he said, "You know what? I appreciate everything you've done for me over the years. Why don't you come in? I'm going to make you breakfast."
Wow.
And it just shocked me. I'm like, I did not expect this from Pete. But Pete brought me in, and I had an amazing breakfast. This is not a picture of the actual breakfast, but I just did not expect that from him. Have you guys ever had that where you didn't expect something from someone? You kind of pegged them as something else, and then they surprised you, and like, wow, that was quite a blessing. Another one, many of you guys live around St. Paul. You know how bad the roads can get, you know how bad the alleys can get. And if you live in a neighborhood like mine, if you want your alley plowed out, you have to go around and collect money from all your neighbors. Oscar, you helped me do that last year, a couple of the other kids. And it's difficult to try to ask people for money, especially when they don't know you. If they're not your next door neighbors, they live down the block or something, they're like, but anyways, we were going around from house to house sharing what we were, you know, collecting money for. And we only needed $20 from every house. It's not a whole lot, but we were just having a hard time getting it from some people. Well, one person that we got money from, she actually gave $100. Okay. She said, "I know some people aren't going to give, and I just really appreciate what you're doing, and here's $100. The person that gave the most, that lady, was a person that I wasn't even expecting to get money from, because they seem like they are not well off at all. And I had judged them for years for not having much money. And here she is, the most generous person, donating five times the amount to the cause of plowing out the alley. So, again, I did not expect that from her. Have you guys ever had that where you expected, this person isn't going to be much of a help, and then next thing you know, it's amazing. And then lastly, I think I've shared this story a little bit before. One of the farms I used to go to when I worked my previous job was owned by the state of Wisconsin, and it employed a lot of the prisoners in the area. So this is actually from my hometown of Waupun, Wisconsin, and they have this farm. So all the workers on the farm are prisoners on their way out of the system. And there was one time that I was chatting with one of the workers there, and we weren't talking very Christian. And the following day, I got called out by an older black man that also worked at the prison there, at the prison farm, and he called me out. He said, "You're a Christian? I would never have expected that the way that you were talking the week before." And it shocked me, it humbled me. It actually started the process of me getting serious about my faith and ending up pursuing ministry. So I'm very grateful to that man, but again, I would have never guessed that an older, what's that? That an older black man in a prison farm would call me out. And it was very humbling, and it really benefited my walk with the Lord. So I just want you guys to be thinking, who is it in your life that maybe you have struggled with, that you've judged or things like that, and you think, boy, there's no positivity there. There's no good things about that relationship. And just put that on the back burner for right now. We are going to continue in Luke chapter 17, and we're only going to be doing about 8 or 9 verses today. So would you stand with me as we read Luke 17, 11 through 19. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers, who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When Jesus saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." You may be seated. So let's go back and look at this verse by verse. I had a lot of fun studying this one this week. Verse 11, on the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. Just pause right there. Why is Jesus going to Jerusalem? He's going to the cross. Okay, that's where he's going. Anytime now that it says on the way to Jerusalem, you could just change that out, on the way to the cross. That's where Jesus is heading. And it's interesting to me that he's got this mission, right? That's the reason that he came to earth, to go to the cross. And yet along the way, he's taking time to minister to people. And it's very humbling to me. Like, so often I get so busy, I get locked in on something I have to do, and I often get grumpy with the people around me because I'm locked in on that. And here Jesus is taking the time to slow down and minister to people along the way to this huge burden that he has to carry. Verses 12 and 13. So he's between Samaria and Galilee. It's interesting because most Jews would probably do their best to stay away from that border, okay? But here Jesus is along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Okay? We have talked about leprosy before, but I think it's worth going back, especially in the context of this story. Okay? I'm not showing you this to gross you out. I want you to know how bad leprosy is, okay? So I have 2 pictures here of how leprosy can affect people physically, okay? There's many different types of skin diseases. Most of this is caused by a bacteria. Jenny, you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff, but I looked some of this up. The symptoms, and what it does is it damages the nerves. So leprosy doesn't make people lose limbs in and of itself, but it'll stop the nerves from feeling so that they will injure themselves, whether it's a foot. They might lose a foot because they don't feel themselves dragging it. They might lose a hand in an accident, things like that. So you can see how bad this disease can get. And it will lead to infections and a lot of times amputation. In the Bible, I like how this commentary put it. They said, in the Bible, leprosy is a graphic illustration of sin's destructive power. Okay? So we can see its destructive power here physically, but not only that, relationally, spiritually, it separated people from the rest. So if we turn to Leviticus 13, back in the law, God addressed leprosy. He says, the leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose, and he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, "Unclean, unclean." He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. And it goes on and on. But you get the gist of what life would be like if you had leprosy. Okay? Stop and think about this. You are unclean. That's your label. And you have to live outside the camp of other people. Do you know how lonely that would be? You think about it. Before you got the disease, you were spending time with your family. You were going to social gatherings. Once you have leprosy and you're labeled unclean, you can't be with your family anymore. You can't go to social gatherings and potlucks and sports events. You can't have any physical touch with people other than other lepers. Imagine going for years maybe without feeling any physical touch from someone. No hugs, no handshakes, no pats on the back. And spiritually too, you're separated from your church. Maybe you were a faithful synagogue goer for years, and now you have leprosy and you have to leave your church and never see them again. Imagine what that life would be like. We all have those days or weeks where we, maybe things are different. You know, even 2020, when we were locked up in our houses, we were all going crazy, right? After just a couple weeks. Imagine that for years. No contact with your people. And if anyone did come near, you had to cry out what? Unclean. That's your label. That defines your whole life now. And you have to warn others, don't come near me. I'm not clean. Now, there was times where people would get healed. I'm assuming that they were very rare. And bear with me here. What would people have to do if they thought that they were better? The Lord said to Moses, the following instructions are for those seeking ceremonial purification from a skin disease. Those who have been healed must be brought to the priest, who will examine them at a place outside the camp. If the priest finds that someone has been healed of a serious skin disease, he will perform a purification ceremony using two live birds that are ceremonially clean, a stick of cedar, some scarlet yarn, and a hyssop branch. The priest will order that one bird be slaughtered over a clay pot filled with fresh water. He will take the live bird, the cedar stick, the scarlet yarn, and the hyssop branch, and dip them in the blood of the bird that was slaughtered over the fresh water. The priest will then sprinkle the blood of the dead bird seven times on the person being purified of the skin disease. When the priest has purified the person, he will release the live bird in the open field to fly away. We read that, it's kind of weird, right? Okay, I love doing this, church. When we go to the Old Testament, I always look for ways. How is this pointing to the gospel? Thank you. What's going on with this whole ceremony? Okay? If someone thinks that they're clean, they have to be brought back into that. They have to be inspected. And the priest, I noticed this first, the priest would go outside the camp. Isn't that what Jesus did for his people? He went out to where the unclean people were to go minister to them. And the priest goes out and he looks and he says, you know, I think this is legit. Let's take two birds. Now we have the need for a sacrifice. And the bird, the one bird, is slaughtered over this pot with water. And it says fresh water in the ESV. I don't know if you have a different translation what it might say. The actual Hebrew says living water. Okay? So that might mean running. But as a New Testament reader, when I hear living water, what am I thinking of? It's pointing to something, right? So here we got this bird that's the blood is dripped into this living water. And then the other bird is basically tied to a cedar stick with some hyssop. And it's dipped in there, live bird, and the blood water is sprinkled over the leprous person seven times. Okay? So now this person has been under the blood. And that bird that did that is let go to go free. It's almost like after you've been dipped in the blood, you are set free, right? Do you guys see the gospel here? And even though this sounds really weird, this is a beautiful picture. The Lord was putting hints of the gospel all throughout these Old Testament books. Okay, so now the leprous person after they go through all of this, they still have things to do here. And so it goes on, the persons being purified must then wash their clothes, shave off all their hair, and bathe themselves in water. Then they will be ceremonially clean and may return to the camp. However, they must remain outside their tents for 7 days. On the seventh day, they must again shave all the hair from their heads, including the hair of their beard and eyebrows. They must also wash their clothes and bathe themselves in water. Then they will be ceremonially clean. Again, this seems kind of weird, right? But there's this period of time before they actually completely enter into the normal way of life. But they have to change their clothes and shave off all the hair of their body. You think about it, women, when you have given birth, a lot of times the baby comes out and no hair, right? Sometimes there's a lot of hair. But you think that there's this picture of new birth here. The person now that is entering back into life has been reborn. And they're starting fresh. And there's this beautiful picture of the gospel saying, when you've gone through this cleansing process through sacrifice and blood, you are now reborn and you can enter back into life with your people. Does that make sense? So here, this is what lepers would have to do for thousands of years if they were dealing with leprosy. They'd have to be unclean, and by the chance that they weren't unclean anymore, the priest would go through all of this with them and they would be reborn. So you can imagine, as a leper, you're longing for this day. You're longing to be clean once more. Now let's jump back into Luke. So Jesus is coming into the village, and he's met by 10 lepers, and they stand at a distance. Why? Because they're unclean. And they cry out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." This is their chance. I don't know how, because they've been outside the camp, how they've heard about Jesus. Somehow they've heard. And somehow they know that Jesus can do something about it. And Jesus says to them in verse 14, when Jesus saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests. Go do what Moses commanded you to do." And you got to think, I thought about this. Other times in the Gospels, Jesus never sticks to one certain formula, does he, to heal people? He's always changing it up. And I think he's doing that to protect his church then later on. Like, there's not a secret formula that you have to figure out or know. The true healing comes from Jesus, and he can do it however he wants. And here, instead of touching the lepers like he did in Luke chapter 5, what does he tell them to do? Go show yourselves to the priests. Go do what the law commands you to do. And the lepers, you got to imagine, they're probably thinking, I'm still a leper, and you're asking me to go to the priests. Shouldn't I look normal first? And Jesus says, go show yourselves to the priests. And notice what it says after that. And as they went, they were cleansed. So, I have three main points that I feel like the Lord laid on me this week. The first one is, oh, sorry, there's your picture. Jesus wants us to obey him in faith. Okay? Go show yourselves to the priest. I'm still a leper. Go show yourself to the priest. Has there been times in our life where Jesus asked us to do something, and we're waiting, like, Jesus, just fix it. Just fix it right away. And he says, no, I want you to, in faith, start heading that direction. And then you notice the answer comes as you follow in faith. I think that's what Jesus calls us to do. There are times, church, where he does heal us like that. Or he does something in our life like that. Okay? But a lot of times, I think he just wants us to, in faith, be listening to his voice and obey him, regardless of what it looks like. Jesus wants us to obey him in faith. So, as they went, they were cleansed. Verse 15, then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Second point. Jesus wants us to show gratitude in worship. Okay? There is a lot of speculating we can do here with these verses. Okay? And I think some of it is probably pretty healthy. I'm thinking because this Samaritan has pointed out the other 9 are likely Jews. I'm wondering, too, where the other 9 had to, in faith, go show themselves to the priest, right? So there was some level of faith there to be healed. But there's something special about this one. When he realizes he's on his way to the priest to show himself, on the way he realizes, "I have now been cleansed. I need to go back and show gratitude to Jesus. The Lord just healed me." And he turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Isn't that a beautiful picture of worship? The other 9 might have been thankful, but they didn't turn back in gratitude and in praise. Or maybe the other 9 were just going through their religious ritual to be cleansed and be back into society. And there was only one that turned back to God and said, you did it. I don't know all the details, but I do think the way that Jesus is pointing out the gratitude in this man, that he wants us to show gratitude in our worship as well. 1 Thessalonians 5:16 to 18 says, "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." How many of us are awesome at this? Right? This is tough. We all have bad things going on in our life. We all see the bad things around us, and it's so easy to get caught up in the negative thinking and the negative complaining and all of that. But what does Paul say to the church in Thessalonica? "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances." Lord, would you help us with that? Right? There was a Bible commentator named Matthew Henry. Maybe you've heard of him before. But there's a story about him getting robbed one time. Okay, someone took his wallet. And that night, as he was laying in bed, he prayed this. He said, "Lord, I thank you that I have never been robbed before. This is the first time. And I thank you that they only took my wallet, not my life. And Lord, they took everything I had, but it wasn't much. And lastly, he thanked the Lord that he was robbed and not the one doing the robbing." Church, I know it's hard, but if we slow down, I think a lot of times we have so much to be thankful for. Things could be worse. And it's the Lord's grace every day. And even on my bad day, is the Lord showing me amazing grace? Left to myself, thank you. Left to myself, I could be way worse situation than what I already am. And it's the Lord's grace that continually keeps me and saves me. And I would just encourage us to work hard at looking for ways to thank God, to show gratitude for what he is doing, rather than the things we think he should be doing, right? Lastly, let's circle back and look at verses 18 and 19 once more. Well, we can go to 17. Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Your faith has made you well. I don't know if you have a footnote there. Another Another way to interpret that is your faith has saved you. There's something about the way that this man came back and showed gratitude. It wasn't just, hey, you're cleansed physically. Something happened in this man's heart where he was saved wholly. Does that make sense? Spiritually, something happened in his heart. And Jesus says, that faith that you just showed, coming back and praising God, that's saving faith. And Jesus elevates this man. And notice, Luke said in verse 16, he points this out specifically. Who is this man? He's a Samaritan. Okay? Who are the Samaritans? We've talked about this before. This is a map of Old Testament times, in the times of the kings. We have the kingdom of Israel split into two. So bear with me on this history lesson. We have the kingdom of Israel to the north and the kingdom of Judah to the south. Okay? Both of them went to idolatry for hundreds of years. And the Lord kept sending prophets, you know, turn from your sin or bad things are going to happen. And they kept going to idolatry. And finally, the kingdom of Israel, the Assyrians came down from the north and took them over. Okay, and one thing, this is in 721 BC, for those nerds that want to know dates. You're welcome. But Assyria invades Israel and takes them over. And one thing what Assyria would do when they took over a people group is that they would intermarry with them. And they would basically wipe this people out. So you have 10 tribes in the north that are now quote-unquote lost tribes. They're no longer fully Jewish. They're gone. They disappeared, whether it's being put in other places or they've been intermarried with other people groups. And when they came back after hundreds of years again, after all this captivity time, you have a bunch of half-breeds settling in this area. Okay, and here we have a map of New Testament times. The gray is all where the Jews would live, and that red there is Samaria. So those are the quote-unquote half-breeds, and they would be looked at much differently. They would look at the Jews much differently. They had their own temple, they had their own version of the Torah, and they had their own customs. So there was a lot of tension between Jews and Samaritans, and they basically hated each other. Okay, so whenever Jesus was going down from Galilee, that region in the north, down to Jerusalem, and he went through Samaria, that was a big deal. Because most Jews would go out of their way to go way away from Samaria. It would be like us traveling down to like Kansas City and saying, I'm not going to go through Iowa. I'm going to go around, right? It's going to add a lot more time to the trip, right? But the Jews hated the Samaritans so much they would take extra days to travel around Samaria. Okay? So you can just feel the tension here. You have 10 lepers, 9 of them are likely Jews, and the one that comes back, Luke says, was a Samaritan. And remember all the wonderful things Jesus just said about this man? Your faith has made you well. Was there no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Jesus is pointing it out. Hey, this guy, disciples, are you paying attention to this half-breed that you didn't think God was going to do anything with? He's the one that came back with saving faith in his heart. Remember my stories about Farmer Pete and, you know, all that? I think this Samaritan was that person to the disciples. They probably thought, wow, Jesus, you're doing a real big favor to that Samaritan. He doesn't even deserve the blessings of God. He's a half-breed. And yet God did something wonderful in this man's heart, and Jesus elevated him and said, look what God's doing, and it's the person you least expected. And that leads to my last point. Jesus wants to change the way we see others. And this is something I've been convicted of some time, especially this week studying this passage. Okay? I think we all have our prejudice and bias and judgments that we use them all the time. Every day we do it, whether we realize it or not. You know how many times Jesus went out of his way for people that no one were paying attention to? Jesus was busy on a mission, going somewhere, doing something, and he took time for the people no one cared about. And then God does something amazing in that person. If you remember back earlier in Luke 2, there was that demon-possessed man and all the demons, you know, Jesus put him all in the pigs, and then he went on to be very fruitful in his region. He went out praising God and telling everyone what God had done in his life. People that we want to avoid. People that we think, there's no chance for God to do something in their life. And God, maybe that's what he's doing. And it's very humbling. Who am I to judge what our God can do? Who am I to think that God doesn't want me to be the vessel of blessing in that person's life? The person I've been trying to avoid, maybe God's saying, no, I actually want you to go near them and to share the gospel. Maybe to be friends with them. Get to know them. See them how I see them. And that's the gospel, isn't it? Who am I? Boy, Jesus saved me, and now I think I'm somebody. No, do you remember before the cross? Each one of us here were a nobody. And Jesus says, I want that one. And he went after you. And he revealed his gospel to you. And he gave you his spirit so that you could respond in faith and say, yes, I believe. Yes, I will follow. It's all Jesus doing that. So who are we to say he can't do that in other people? We need church. We need to remind ourselves of the gospel all the time. I still need this. Left to myself, I would walk away. I would pursue sin. I would give up when things get hard. And Jesus gave his life for me so that I would in turn give my life to him and say, it's yours. Use me how you want me. And just like those little birds in that ceremony for the lepers. You know, isn't that what Jesus does? He saves us under his blood and sets us free. And he sets us free with a purpose so that we continually obey him in faith. I know what you did, Jesus, so I will obey you in this part of my life. If you can save me from sin and death, you can save me from that situation at work. Or that relationship that I have that feels broken. Or my finances are falling apart. You got this, Jesus, and I just need to trust you. That doesn't mean it doesn't come with pain. But it means that we will obey him in faith. He sets us free so we can show gratitude in our worship. When we're set free, when we realize the bondage that we were under in sin, headed to death, headed to God's judgment, and he sets us free, how can we not worship with gratitude? And Jesus also saves us and sets us free so that we pray that we see people the way that he sees them. That person I asked you at the beginning that maybe came to your mind, I've judged them. I didn't expect that from them. Maybe that's the person Jesus wants you to pursue this week. God, you put them in my life for a reason. And I want to humbly join you in what you're doing. Isn't that amazing? The creator of the universe might be saving another soul. Might be doing something big in someone's life. And he's saying, hey, why don't you come along? Why don't you be a part of this? But too often our pride gets in the way and we don't get to experience that joy because we're too judgmental. Liam.